followed, and the cycle ended with the hour of the tiger between 3 a.m. and 5 a.m.
Would you like to join the lesson?
Thank you, no. I'm too old to change my ways, Ishido said thinly.
I hear the captain of your men was ordered to commit seppuku.
Naturally, the bandits should have been caught. At least one of them should have been caught. Then we would have found the others.
I'm astounded that such carrion could operate so close to the castle.
I agree. Perhaps the barbarian could describe them.
What would a barbarian know?
Toranaga laughed.
As to the bandits, they were Ronin, weren't they? Ronin are plentiful among your men. Inquiries there might prove fruitful, nay?
Inquiries are being pressed in many directions. Ishido passed over the veiled sneer about Ronin, the masterless, almost outcast mercenary samurai, who had, in their thousands, flocked to the heir's banner when Ishido had whispered it abroad, that he, on behalf of the heir and the mother of the heir, would accept their fidelity, would, incredibly, forgive and forget their indiscretions or past, and would, in the course of time, repay their loyalty with a taiko's lavishness. Ishido knew that it had been a brilliant move. It gave him an enormous pool of trained samurai to draw upon. It guaranteed loyalty, for Ronin knew they would never get another such chance. It brought into his camp all the angry ones, many of whom had been made Ronin by Torinaga's conquests and those of his allies. And lastly, it removed a danger to the realm, an increase in the bandit population, for almost the only supportable way of life open to a samurai unlucky enough to become Ronin was to become a monk or bandit. There are many things I don't understand about this ambush, Ishido said, his voice tinged with venom.
Yes. Why, for instance, should bandits try to capture this barbarian for ransom? There are plenty of others in the city, vastly more important. Isn't that what the bandit said? It was ransom he wanted? Ransom from whom? What's the barbarian's value? None. And how did they know where he would be? It was only yesterday that I gave the order to bring him to the heir, thinking it would amuse the boy. Very curious.
Very,
Toranaga said.
Then there's the coincidence of Lord Yabu being in the vicinity, with some of your men and some of mine, at that exact time. Very curious.
Very. Of course he was there, because I had sent for him, and your men were there, because we agreed, at your suggestion, that it was good policy and a way to begin to heal the breach between us, that your men accompany mine wherever they go while I'm on this official visit.
It is also strange that the bandits who were sufficiently brave and well-organized to slay the first 10 without a fight acted like Koreans when our men arrived. The two sides were equally matched. Why didn't the bandits fight or take the barbarian into the hills immediately and not stupidly stay on a main path to the castle? Very curious.
Very. I'll certainly be taking double guards with me tomorrow when I go hawking, just in case. It's disconcerting to know bandits are so close to the castle. Yes. Perhaps you'd like to hunt, too. Fly one of your hawks against mine. I'll be hunting the hills to the north.
Thank you, no. I'll be busy tomorrow. Perhaps the day after? I've ordered 20,000 men to sweep all the forests, woods, and glades around Osaka. There won't be a bandit within 20 li in 10 days. That I can promise you.
Toranaga knew that Ishido was using the bandits as an excuse to increase the number of his troops in the vicinity.
If he says 20, he means 50. The neck of the trap is closing, he told himself. Why so soon? What new treachery has happened? Why is Ishido so confident?
Good. Then the day after tomorrow, Lord Ishido. You'll keep your men away from my hunting area? I wouldn't want my game disturbed.
He added thinly.
Of course. And the barbarian? He is and always was my property. And his ship. But you can have him when I've finished with him. And afterwards you can send him to the execution ground, if you wish.
Thank you. Yes, I'll do that.
Ishido closed his fan and slipped it into his sleeve.
He's unimportant. What is important and the reason for my coming to see you is that... Oh, by the way, I heard that the lady, my mother, is visiting the Joji Monastery.
Oh? I would have thought the season's a little late for looking at cherry blossoms. Surely they'd be well past their prime now.
I agree. But then if she wishes to see them, why not? You can never tell with the elderly. They have minds of their own and see things differently, eh? But her health isn't good. I worry about her. She has to be very careful. She takes a chill very easily.
It's the same with my mother. You have to watch the health of the old.
Taranaga made a mental note to send an immediate message to remind the abbot to watch over the old woman's health very carefully. If she were to die in the monastery, the repercussions would be terrible. He would be shamed before the empire. All daimyos would realize that in the chess game for power, he had used a helpless old woman, the mother of his enemy, as a pawn, and failed in his responsibility to her. Taking a hostage was, in truth, a dangerous ploy. Ishido had become almost blind with rage when he had heard that his revered mother was in the Toranaga stronghold at Nagoya. Heads had fallen. He had immediately brought forward plans for Toranaga's destruction, and had taken a solemn resolve to invest Nagoya and obliterate the daimyo Kazamaki, in whose charge she had ostensibly been, the moment hostilities began. Last, a private message had been sent to the abbot through intermediaries, that unless she was brought safely out of the monastery within 24 hours, Naga, the only son of Toranaga within reach, and any of his women that could be caught, would, unhappily, wake up in the leper village, having been fed by them, watered by them, and serviced by one of their whores. Ishido knew that while his mother was in Toranaga's power, he had to tread lightly. But he had made it clear that if she was not let go, he would set the empire to the torch.
"How is the lady your mother, Lord Toranaga?" he asked politely.
"She's very well, thank you."
Toranaga allowed his happiness to show, both at the thought of his mother and at the knowledge of Ishido's impotent fury.
"She's remarkably fit for 74. I only hope I'm as strong as she is when I'm her age."
"You're 58, Toranaga, but you'll never reach 59,
Ishido promised himself.
"Please give her my best wishes for a continued happy life. Thank you again, and I'm sorry that you were inconvenienced."
He bowed with great politeness, and then, holding in his soaring pleasure with difficulty, he added,
"Oh, yes, the important matter I wanted to see you about was that the last formal meeting of the regents has been postponed. We do not meet tonight at sunset."
Toranaga kept the smile on his face, but inside he was rocked.
"Oh? Why?"
"Lord Kiyama's sick. Lord Sugiyama and Lord Onoshi have agreed to the delay. So did I. A few days are unimportant, aren't they, on such important matters?"
"We can have the meeting without Lord Kiyama."
"We have agreed that we should not."
Ishido's eyes were taunting.
"Formally?"
"Here are our four seals."
Toranaga was seething. Any delay jeopardized him immeasurably. Could he barter Ishido's mother for an immediate meeting? No, because it would take too much time for the orders to go back and forth, and he would have conceded a very great advantage for nothing.
When will the meeting be?
I understand Lord Kiyama should be well tomorrow, or perhaps the next day.
Good. I'll send my personal physician to see him.
I'm sure he'd appreciate that, but his own has forbidden any visitors. The disease might be contagious, eh?
What disease?
I don't know, my lord. That's what I was told.
Is the doctor a barbarian?
Yes. I understand the chief doctor of the Christians. A Christian doctor priest for a Christian daimyo. Ours are not good enough for so important a daimyo,
Ishido said with a sneer.
Toranaga's concern increased. If the doctor were Japanese, there were many things he could do. But with a Christian doctor, inevitably a Jesuit priest, well, to go against one of them, or even to interfere with one of them, might alienate all Christian daimyos, which he could not afford to risk. He knew his friendship with Tsuku-san would not help him against the Christian daimyos, Anoshi or Kiyama. It was in Christian interests to present a united front. Soon he would have to approach them, the barbarian priests, to make an arrangement, to find out the price of their cooperation.
If Ishido truly has Onoshi and Kiyama with him, and all the Christian daimyos would follow these two if they acted jointly, then I'm isolated, he thought. Then my only way left is Crimson Sky.
I'll visit Lord Kiyama the day after tomorrow, he said, naming a deadline. That's the contagion? I'd never forgive myself if anything happened to you while you're here in Osaka, my lord. You are our guest in my care. I must insist you do not.
You may rest comfortably, my lord Ishido. The contagion that will topple me has not yet been born, eh? You forget the soothsayer's prediction.
When the Chinese embassy had come to the Taiko 6 years ago, to try to settle the Japanese-Korean-Chinese War, a famous astrologer had been among them. This Chinese had forecast many things that had since come true. At one of the Taiko's incredibly lavish ceremonial dinners, the Taiko had asked the soothsayer to predict the deaths of certain of his counselors. The astrologer had said that Toranaga would die by the sword when he was middle-aged. Ishido, the famous conqueror of Korea, or Chaoxian, as Chinese called that land, would die undiseased, an old man, his feet firm in the earth, the most famous man of his day. But the Taiko himself would die in his bed, respected, revered, of old age, leaving a healthy son to follow him. This had so pleased the Taiko, who was still childless, that he had decided to let the embassy return to China and not kill them as he had planned for their previous insolences. Instead of negotiating for peace as he had expected, the Chinese emperor, through his embassy, had merely offered to invest him as king of the country of Wa, as the Chinese call Japan. So he had sent them home alive, and not in the very small boxes that had already been prepared for them, and renewed the war against Korea and China.
No, Lord Toranaga, I haven't forgotten, Ishido said, remembering very well. But contagion can be uncomfortable. Why be uncomfortable? You could catch the perks like your son, Noboru. So sorry. Or become a leper like Lord Onoshi. He's still young, but he suffers. Oh, yes, he suffers.
Momentarily, Toranaga was thrown off balance. He knew the ravages of both diseases too well. Noboru, his eldest living son, had caught the Chinese pox when he was 17, 10 years ago, and all the cures of the doctors, Japanese, Chinese, Korean, and Christian, had not managed to allay the disease, which had already defaced him, but would not kill him.
If I become all-powerful, Toranaga promised himself, perhaps I can stamp out that disease. Does it really come from women? How do women get it? How can it be cured?
Poor Noboru, Toranaga thought.
Except for the pox, you'd be my heir, because you're a brilliant soldier, a better administrator than Sudara, and very cunning. You must have done many bad things in a previous life, to have had to carry so many burdens in this one. By the Lord Buddha, I'd not wish either of those on anyone, he said.
I agree, Ishido said, believing Toranaga would wish them both on him if he could.
He bowed again and left. Toranaga broke the silence.
Well, Hiromatsu said, if you stay or leave now, it's the same. Disaster. Because now you've been betrayed and you are isolated, sire. If you stay for the meeting, you won't get a meeting for a week. Ishido will have mobilized his legions around Osaka, and you'll never escape, whatever happens to the Lady Ochiba in Edo. And clearly Ishido's decided to risk her to get you. It's obvious you're betrayed, and the four regents will make a decision against you. A 4-1 vote in council impeaches you. If you leave, they'll still issue whatever orders Ishido wishes. You're bound to uphold a 4-1 decision. You swore to do it. You cannot go against your solemn word as a regent.
I agree.
The silence held. Hiromatsu waited with growing anxiety.
What are you going to do?
First, I'm going to have my swim,
Toranaga said with surprising joviality.
Then I'll see the barbarian.
The woman walked quietly through Toranaga's private garden in the castle, toward the little thatched hut that was set so prettily in a glade of maples. Her silk kimono and obi were the most simple yet the most elegant that the most famous craftsman in China could make. She wore her hair in the latest Kyoto fashion, piled high and held in place with long silver pins. A colorful sunshade protected her very fair skin. She was tiny, just 5 feet, but perfectly proportioned. Around her neck was a thin golden chain, and hanging from it, a small golden crucifix. Kiri was waiting on the veranda of the hut. She sat heavily in the shade, her buttocks overflowing her cushion, and she watched the woman approach along the stepping stones, which had been set so carefully into the moss that they seemed to have grown there.
You're more beautiful than ever, younger than ever, Toda Mariko-san,
Kiri said without jealousy, returning her bow.
I wish that were true, Kiritsubo-san,
Mariko replied, smiling. She knelt on a cushion, unconsciously arranging her skirts into a delicate pattern.
It's true. When did we last meet? 2-3 years ago? You haven't changed a hair's breadth in 20 years. It must be almost 20 years since we first met. Do you remember? It was at a feast Lord Goroda gave. You were 14, just married, and rare. And frightened. No, not you. Not frightened. It was 16 years ago, Kiritsubo-san, not 20. Yes. I remember it very well. Too well, she thought, heartsick. That was the day my brother whispered that he believed our revered father was going to be revenged on his liege lord, the dictator Goroda, that he was going to assassinate him. His liege lord. Oh, yes, Kiri-san. I remember that day, and that year, and that hour. It was the beginning of all the horror. I've never admitted to anyone that I knew what was going to happen before it happened. I never warned my husband, or Hiromatsu his father, both faithful vassals of the dictator, that treachery was planned by one of his greatest generals. Worse, I never warned Goroda, my liege lord. So I failed in my duty to my liege lord, to my husband, to his family, which because of my marriage is my only family. Oh, Madonna, forgive me my sin. Help me to cleanse myself. I kept silent to protect my beloved father, who desecrated the honor of 1,000 years. Oh, my God. Oh, Lord Jesus of Nazareth. save this sinner from eternal damnation?
It was 16 years ago,
Mariko said serenely.
I was carrying Lord Dorinaga's child that year,
Kiri said. And she thought,
if Lord Goroda had not been foully betrayed and murdered by your father, my Lord Torinaga would never have had to fight the Battle of Nagakude. I would never have caught a chill there, and my child would never have miscarried. Perhaps,
she told herself.
And perhaps not. It was just karma. My karma. Whatever happened, ne? Ah, Mariko-san,
she said, no malice in her.
That's so long ago. It almost seems like another lifetime. But you're ageless. Why can't I have your figure and beautiful hair and walk so daintily?
Kiri laughed.
The answer's simple. Because I eat too much. What does it matter? You bask in Lord Torinaga's favor, ne? So you're fulfilled. You're wise and warm and whole and happy in yourself. I'd rather be thin and still able to eat and be in favor,
Kiri said.
But you, you're not happy in yourself? I'm only an instrument for my Lord Buntaro to play upon. If the Lord, my husband, is happy, then of course I'm happy. His pleasure's my pleasure. It's the same with you,
Mariko said.
Yes, but not the same.
Kiri moved her fan, the golden silk catching the afternoon sun.
I'm so glad I'm not you, Mariko, with all your beauty and brilliance and courage and learning. No, I couldn't bear being married to that hateful, ugly, arrogant, violent man for a day, let alone 17 years. He's so opposite to his father, Lord Hiromatsu. Now there's a wonderful man. But Buntaro? How do fathers have such terrible sons? I wish I had a son. Oh, how I wish. But you, Mariko, how have you borne such ill treatment all these years? How have you endured your tragedies? It seems impossible that there's no shadow of them on your face or in your soul. You're an amazing woman, Toda Buntaro Mariko-san.
Thank you, Kiritsubo Toshiko-san.
Oh, Kiri-san, it's so good to see you. And you, how is your son? Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Seruji's 15 now. Can you imagine it? Tall and strong and just like his father. And Lord Hiromatsu has given Seruji his own fief, and he's... Did you know that he's going to be married? No. To whom? She's a granddaughter of Lord Kiyama's. Lord Torinaga's arranged it so well. A very fine match for our family. I only wish the girl herself was more attentive to my son, more worthy. Do you know she...
Mariko laughed, a little shyly.
There. I sound like every mother-in-law that's ever been. But I think you'd agree. She isn't really trained yet. You'll have time to do that. Oh, I hope so. Yes, I'm lucky I don't have a mother-in-law. I don't know what I'd do. You'd enchant her and train her as you train all your household, ne? I wish that was also true.
Mariko's hands were motionless in her lap. She watched a dragonfly settle, then dart away.
My husband ordered me here. Lord Torinaga wishes to see me? Yes, he wants you to interpret for him.
Mariko was startled.
With whom? The new barbarian. Oh, but what about Father Tsuku-san? Is he sick? No.
Kiri played with her fan.
I suppose it's left to us to wonder why Lord Torinaga wants you here and not the priest, as in the first interview. Why is it, Mariko-san, that we have to guard all the monies, pay all the bills, train all the servants, buy all the food and household goods, even most times the clothes of our lords. But they don't really tell us anything, do they? Perhaps that's what our intuition's for. Probably.
Kiri's gaze was level and friendly.
But I'd imagine that this would all be a very private matter. So you would swear by your Christian God not to divulge anything about this meeting to anyone?
The day seemed to lose its warmth.
Of course,
Mariko said uneasily. She understood very clearly that Kiri meant she was to say nothing to her husband, or to his father, or to her confessor. As her husband had ordered her here, obviously at Lord Torunaga's request, her duty to her liege Lord Torunaga overcame her duty to her husband, so she could withhold information freely from him. But to her confessor? Could she say nothing to him? And why was she the interpreter, and not Father Tsuku-san? She knew that once more, against her will, she was involved in the kind of political intrigue that had bedeviled her life, and wished again that her family was not ancient and Hujimoto, that she had never been born with the gift of tongues that had allowed her to learn the almost incomprehensible Portuguese and Latin languages, and that she had never been born at all.
But then, she thought, I would never have seen my son, nor learned about the Christ child, or his truth, or about the life everlasting. It is your karma, Mariko, she told herself sadly. Just karma. Very well, Kiri-san.
Then she added with foreboding,
I swear by the Lord my God that I will not divulge anything said here today, or at any time I am interpreting for my liege lord. I would also imagine that you might have to exclude part of your own feelings to translate exactly what is said. This new barbarian is strange and says peculiar things. I'm sure my lord picked you above all possibilities for special reasons. I am Lord Torunaga's to do with as he wishes. He need never have any fear for my loyalty. That was never in question, lady. I meant no harm.
A spring rain came and speckled the petals and the mosses and the leaves, and disappeared, leaving ever more beauty in its wake.
I would ask a favor, Mariko-san. Would you please put your crucifix under your kimono?
Mariko's fingers darted for it defensively.
Why? Lord Torunaga has never objected to my conversion, nor has Lord Hiromatsu, the head of my clan. My husband allows me to keep it and wear it. Yes, but crucifixes send this barbarian mad, and my Lord Torunaga doesn't want him mad. He wants him soothed.
Blackthorn had never seen anyone so petite.
Konnichiwa, he said. Konnichi, Torunaga-sama.
He bowed as a courtier, nodded to the boy who knelt, wide-eyed, beside Torunaga, and to the fat woman who was behind him. They were all on the veranda that encircled the small hut. The hut contained a single small room with rustic screens and hewn beams and thatched roof, and a kitchen area behind. It was set on pilings of wood and raised a foot or so above a carpet of pure white sand. This was a ceremonial tea house for the Chanoyu ceremony, and built at vast expense with rare materials for that purpose alone, though sometimes, because these houses were isolated in glades, they were used for trysts and private conversations. Blackthorn gathered his kimono around him and sat on the cushion that had been placed on the sand below and in front of them.
Gomen nasai, Torunaga-sama. Nihon go ga hanase masen. Tsuyaku ga imasu ka?
I am your interpreter, senor, Mariko said at once, in almost flawless Portuguese. But you speak Japanese?
No, senorita. Just a few words or phrases,
Blackthorn replied, taken aback. He had been expecting Father Alvito to be the interpreter, and Torunaga to be accompanied by samurai, and perhaps the daimyo Yabu. But no samurai were near, though many ringed the garden.
My lord, Torunaga asks, where? First, perhaps I should ask if you prefer to speak Latin.
Whichever you wish, senorita. Like any educated man, Blackthorn could read, write, and speak Latin, because Latin was the only language of learning throughout the civilized world.
Who is this woman? Why did she learn such perfect Portuguese? And Latin? Where else but from the Jesuits, he thought. In one of their schools. Oh, they're so clever. The first thing they do is build a school.
It was only 70 years ago that Ignatius Loyola had formed the Society of Jesus. And now their schools, the finest in Christendom, were spread across the world, and their influence bolstered or destroyed kings. They had the ear of the Pope. They had halted the tide of the Reformation, and were now winning back huge territories for their church.
We will speak Portuguese, then, she was saying. My master wishes to know where you learned your few words and phrases.
There was a monk in the prison, senorita, a Franciscan monk, and he taught me. Things like food, friend, bath, go, come, true, false, here, there, I, you, please, thank you, want, don't want, prisoner, yes, no, and so on. It's only a beginning, unfortunately. Would you please tell Lord Torunaga that I'm better prepared now to answer his questions, to help, and more than a little pleased to be out of prison, for which I thank him.
Blackthorn watched as she turned and spoke to Torunaga. He knew that he would have to speak simply, preferably in short sentences, and be careful, because unlike the priest who interpreted simultaneously, this woman waited till he had finished, then gave a synopsis or a version of what was said. The usual problem of all except the finest interpreters, though even they, as with the Jesuit, allowed their own personalities to influence what was said, voluntarily or involuntarily. The bath and massage and food and 2 hours of sleep had immeasurably refreshed him. The bath attendants, all women of girth and strength, had pummeled him and shampooed his hair, braiding it in a neat queue, and the barber had trimmed his beard. He had been given a clean loincloth and kimono and sash, and tabi and thongs for his feet. The futons on which he had slept had been so clean like the room. It had all seemed dreamlike, and waking from dreamlessness, he had wondered momentarily which was the dream, this or the prison. He had waited impatiently, hoping that he would be guided again to Torunaga, planning what to say and what to reveal, how to outwit Father Alvito, and how to gain ascendance over him. And over Torunaga. For he knew, beyond all doubt, because of what Friar Domingo had told him about the Portuguese, and Japanese politics and trade, that he could now help Torunaga, who, in return, could easily give him the riches he desired. And now, with no priest to fight, he felt even more confident.
I'd need just a little luck and patience.
Torunaga was listening intently to the doll-like interpreter. Blackthorn thought,
I could pick her up with one hand, and if I put both hands around her waist, my fingers would touch. How old would she be? Perfect. Married? No wedding ring. Ah, that's interesting. She's wearing no jewelry of any kind, except the silver pins in her hair. Neither is the other woman, the fat one.
He searched his memory. The other two women in the village had worn no jewelry either, and he had not seen any on any of Murat's household.
Why? And who's the fat woman? Torunaga's wife? Or the boy's nursemaid? Would the lad be Torunaga's son? Or grandson, perhaps? Friar Domingo had said that Japanese had only one wife at one time, but as many consorts, legal mistresses, as they wished. Was the interpreter Torunaga's consort? What would it be like to have such a woman in bed? I'd be afraid of crushing her. No, she wouldn't break. There are women in England almost as small, but not like her.
The boy was small and straight and round-eyed, his full black hair tied into a short queue, his pate unshaven. His curiosity seemed enormous. Without thinking, Blackthorn winked. The boy jumped, then laughed, and interrupted Mariko and pointed and spoke out, and they listened indulgently, and no one hushed him. When he had finished, Torunaga spoke briefly to Blackthorn.
Lord Torunaga asks, why did you do that, senor?
Oh, just to amuse the lad. He's a child like any, and children in my country would usually laugh if you did that. My son must be about his age now. My son's 7.
The heir is 7,
Mariko said after a pause, then translated what he had said.
Heir? Does that mean the boy's Lord Torunaga's only son?
Blackthorn asked.
Lord Torunaga has instructed me to say that you will please confine yourself to answering questions only, for the moment.
Then she added,
I'm sure if you are patient, Pilot Captain Backthorn, that you'll be given an opportunity to ask anything you wish later.
Very well.
As your name is very hard to say, Signor, for we do not have the sounds to pronounce it, may I, for Lord Torunaga, use your Japanese name, Anjin-san?
Of course.
Blackthorn was going to ask hers, but he remembered what she had said and reminded himself to be patient.
Thank you. My lord asks, do you have any other children?
A daughter. She was born just before I left my home in England. So she's about 2 now.
You have one wife or many?
One. That's our custom, like the Portuguese and Spanish. We don't have consorts, formal consorts.
Is this your first wife, senor?
Yes.
Please, how old are you?
36.
Where in England do you live?
On the outskirts of Chatham. That's a small port near London.
London is your chief city?
Yes.
He asks, what languages do you speak?
English, Portuguese, Spanish, Dutch, and of course Latin.
What is Dutch?
It's a language spoken in Europe, in the Netherlands. It's very similar to German. She frowned.
Dutch is a heathen language? German too?
Both are non-Catholic countries, he said carefully.
Excuse me, isn't that the same as heathen?
No, señorita. Christianity is split in 2 distinct and very separate religions, Catholicism and Protestantism. There are 2 versions of Christianity. The sect in Japan is Catholic. At the moment, both sects are very hostile to each other. He marked her astonishment and felt Torunaga's growing impatience at being left out of the conversation.
Be careful, he cautioned himself. She's certainly Catholic. Lead up to things. And be simple.
Perhaps Lord Torunaga doesn't wish to discuss religion, señorita, as it was partially covered in our first meeting.
You are a Protestant Christian?
Yes.
And Catholic Christians are your enemies?
Most would consider me heretic and their enemy, yes.
She hesitated, turned to Torunaga, and spoke at length. There were many guards around the perimeter of the garden. All well away, all browns. Then Blackthorn noticed 10 greys sitting in a neat group in the shade, all eyes on the boy.
What significance is that? He wondered.
Torunaga was cross-questioning Mariko, then spoke directly at Blackthorn.
My lord wishes to know about you and your family, Mariko began. About your country, its queen and previous rulers, habits, customs, and history. Similarly, about all other countries, particularly Portugal and Spain. All about the world you live in. About your ships, weapons, foods, trade. About your wars and battles, and how to navigate a ship, how you guided your ship, and what happened on the voyage. He wants to understand... Excuse me, why do you laugh?
Only because, señorita, that seems to be just about everything I know.
That is precisely what my master wishes. Precisely is the correct word?
Yes, senorita. May I compliment you on your Portuguese, which is flawless?
Her fan fluttered a little.
Thank you, senor. Yes, my master wants to learn the truth about everything. What is fact, and what would be your opinion?
I'd be glad to tell him. It might take a little time.
My master has the time, he says.
Blackthorn looked at Toranaga.
Well, carry us.
If you will excuse me, senor, my master orders me to say your accent is a little wrong.
Mariko showed him how to say it, and he repeated it and thanked her.
I am Senora Mariko Buntaro, not Senorita.
Yes, Senora.
Blackthorn glanced at Toranaga.
Where would he like me to begin?
She asked him. A fleeting smile spread across Toranaga's strong face.
He says, at the beginning.
Blackthorn knew that this was another trial.
What, out of all the limitless possibilities, should he start with? Whom should he talk to? To Toranaga, the boy, or the woman?
Obviously, if only men had been present, to Toranaga. But now? Why were the women and the boy present? That must have significance. He decided to concentrate on the boy and the women.
In ancient times, my country was ruled by a great king who had a magic sword called Excalibur, and his queen was the most beautiful woman in the land. His chief counselor was a wizard, Merlin, and the king's name was Arthur. He began confidently, telling the legend that his father used to tell so well in the mists of his youth. King Arthur's capital was called Camelot, and it was a happy time of no wars and good harvests, and suddenly he realized the enormity of his mistake. The kernel of the story was about Guinevere and Lancelot, an adulterous queen and a faithless vassal, about Mordred, Arthur's illegitimate son, who treacherously goes to war against his father, and about a father who kills this son in battle, only to be mortally wounded by him.
Oh, Jesus God, how could I be so stupid? Isn't Toranaga like a great king? Aren't these his ladies? Isn't that his son?
Are you sick, senor?
No, no, I'm sorry. It was just...
You were saying, senor, about this king and the good harvest?
Yes, it's... Like most countries, our past is clouded with myths and legends, most of which are unimportant, he said lamely, trying to gain time.
She stared at him perplexed. Toranaga's eyes became more piercing, and the boy yawned.
You were saying, senor?
Well...
Then he had a flash of inspiration.
Perhaps the best thing I could do is draw a map of the world, senora, as we know it, he said in a rush. Would you like me to do that?
She translated this, and he saw a glimmer of interest from Toranaga, nothing from the boy or the women.
How to involve them?
My master says yes. I will send for paper.
Thank you. But this will do for the moment. Later, if you'll give me some writing materials, I can draw an accurate one.
Blackthorn got off his cushion and knelt. With his finger, he began to draw a crude map in the sand, upside down so they could see better.
The earth's round, like an orange, but this map is like its skin, cut off in ovals, north to south, laid flat and stretched a bit at the top and bottom. A Dutchman called Mercator invented the way to do this accurately 20 years ago. It's the first accurate world map. We can even navigate with it, or his globes.
He had sketched the continents boldly.
This is north and this south, east and west. Japan is here. My country's on the other side of the world, there. This is all unknown and unexplored.
His hand eliminated everything in North America, north of a line from Mexico to Newfoundland, everything in South America apart from Peru, and a narrow strip of coastland around that continent, then everything north and east of Norway, everything east of Muscovy, all Asia, all inland Africa, everything south of Java and the tip of South America. We know the coastlines, but little else. The interiors of Africa, the Americas, and Asia are almost entirely mysteries.
He stopped to let her catch up. She was translating more easily now, and he felt their interest growing. The boy stirred and moved a little closer.
The heir wishes to know where we are on the map.
Here. This is Cathay, China, I think. I don't know how far we are off the coast. It took me 2 years to sail from here to here. Toranaga and the fat woman craned to see better.
The heir says, but why are we so small on your map?
It's just a scale, Senora. On this continent, from Newfoundland here to Mexico here, is almost 1,000 leagues, each of 3 miles. From here to Edo is about 100 leagues. There was a silence. Then they talked amongst themselves.
Lord Toranaga wishes you to show him on the map how you came to Japan.
This way. This is Magellan's Pass, or Strait, here at the tip of South America. It's called that after the Portuguese navigator who discovered it 80 years ago. Since then, the Portuguese and Spanish have kept the way secret for their exclusive use. We were the first outsiders through the pass. I had one of their secret rudders, a type of map, but even so, I still had to wait 6 months to get through because the winds were against us. She translated what he had said. Toranaga looked up, disbelieving.
My master says you are mistaken. All Portuguese come from the south. That is their route, the only route.
Yes, it's true the Portuguese favor that way. The Cape of Good Hope, we call it, because they have dozens of forts all along these coasts. Africa and India and the Spice Islands, to provision in and winter in. And their galleon warships patrol and monopolize the sea lanes. However, the Spanish use Magellan's Pass to get to their Pacific American colonies and to the Philippines, or they cross here at the narrow isthmus of Panama, going overland to avoid months of travel. For us, it was safer to sail via Magellan's Strait, otherwise we'd have had to run the gauntlet of all those enemy Portuguese forts. Please tell Lord Toranaga I know the position of many of them now. Most employ Japanese troops, by the way, he added with emphasis. The friar who gave me the information in the prison was Spanish and hostile to the Portuguese and hostile to all Jesuits. Blackthorn saw an immediate reaction on her face, and when she translated, on Toranaga's face.
Give her time, and keep it simple, he warned himself.
Japanese troops? You mean samurai?
Ronin would describe them, I imagine.
You said a secret map. My lord wishes to know how you obtained it.
A man named Peter Siderhoof, from Holland, was the private secretary to the primate of Goa. That's the title of the chief Catholic priest, and Goa's the capital of Portuguese India. You know, of course, that the Portuguese are trying to take over that continent by force. As private secretary to this archbishop, who was also the Portuguese viceroy at the time, all sorts of documents passed through his hands. After many years, he obtained some of their rudders, maps, and copied them. These gave the secrets of the way through Magellan's Pass, and also how to get around the Cape of Good Hope, and the shoals and reefs from Goa to Japan, via Macau. My rudder was the Magellan one. It was with my papers that I lost from my ship. They are vital to me, and could be of immense value to Lord Toranaga.
My master says that he has sent orders to seek them. Continue, please.
When Siderhoof returned to Holland, he sold them to the Company of East India Merchants, which was given the monopoly for Far Eastern exploration. She was looking at him coldly.
This man was a paid spy?
He was paid for his maps, yes. That's their custom. That's how they reward a man. Not with a title or land, only money. Holland's a republic. Of course, Senora. My country and our allies, Holland, are at war with Spain and Portugal, and have been for years. You'll understand, Senora, in war it's vital to find out your enemy's secrets. Mariko turned and spoke at length.
My lord says, why would this archbishop employ an enemy?
The story Peter Siderhoof told was that this archbishop, who was a Jesuit, was interested only in trade. Siderhoof doubled their revenue, so he was cherished. He was an extremely clever merchant. Hollanders are usually superior to Portuguese in this, so his credentials weren't checked very closely. Also, many men with blue eyes and fair hair, Germans and other Europeans, are Catholic.
Blackthorn waited till that was translated, then added carefully,
he was chief spy for Holland in Asia, a soldier of the country, and he put some of his people on Portuguese ships. Please tell Lord Toranaga that without Japan's trade, Portuguese India cannot live for long.
Toranaga kept his eyes on the map while Mariko talked. There was no reaction to what she had said. Blackthorn wondered if she had translated everything. Then,
my master would like a detailed world map, on paper, as soon as possible, with all the Portuguese bases marked, and the numbers of Ronin at each. He says, please continue.
Blackthorn knew he had made a giant step forward, but the boy yawned, so he decided to change course, still heading for the same harbour.
Our world is not always as it seems. For instance, south of this line, we call it the equator, the seasons are reversed. When we have summer, they have winter. When we have summer, they're freezing.
Why is that?
I don't know, but it's true. Now the way to Japan is through either of these two southern straits. We English, we're trying to find a northern route, either northeast over the Siberias or northwest over the Americas. I've been as far north as this. The whole land's perpetual ice and snow here, and it's so cold most of the year that if you don't wear fur mittens, your fingers will freeze in moments. The people who live there are called Laplanders. Their clothes are made out of fur pelts. The men hunt, and the women do all the work. Part of the women's work is to make all the clothes. To do this, most times they have to chew the pelts to soften them, before they can stitch them.
Mariko laughed out loud. Blackthorn smiled with her, feeling more confident now.
It's true, Senora. It's Honto. Sore wa Honto, deska?
Toranaga asked impatiently. What's true?
Through more laughter, she told him what had been said. They also began to laugh. I lived among them for almost a year. We were trapped in the ice and had to wait for the thaw. Their food is fish, seals, occasionally polar bears and whales, which they eat raw. Their greatest delicacy is to eat raw whale blubber.
Oh, come now, Anjin-san.
It's true. And they live in small round houses made entirely out of snow, and they never bathe.
What? Never?
She burst out. He shook his head and decided not to tell her baths were rare in England, rarer even than in Portugal and Spain, which were warm countries. She translated this. Toranaga shook his head in disbelief.
My master says this is too much of an exaggeration. No one could live without baths, even uncivilized people.
That's the truth, Honto, he said calmly and raised his hand. I swear by Jesus of Nazareth and by my soul, I swear it is the truth.
She watched him in silence.
Everything?
Yes. Lord Toranaga wanted the truth. Why should I lie? My life is in his hands. It is easy to prove the truth. No, to be honest, it would be very hard to prove what I've said. You'd have to go there and see for yourself. Certainly the Portuguese and Spanish, who are my enemies, won't support me. But Lord Toranaga asked for the truth. He can trust me to tell it to him.
Mariko thought a moment. Then she scrupulously translated what he had said. At length,
Lord Toranaga says, it is unbelievable that any human could live without bathing.
Yes, but those are the cold lands. Their habits are different from yours and mine. For instance, In my country, everyone believes baths are dangerous for your health. My grandmother, Granny Jacoba, used to say, "A bath when you're birthed, and another when laid out, will see thee through the pearly gates."
That's very hard to believe.
Some of your customs are very hard to believe. But it is true that I've had more baths in the short time I've been in your country than in as many years before. I admit freely I feel better for them. He grinned. I no longer believe baths are dangerous. So I've gained by coming here, no? After a pause, Mariko said,
"Yes,"
and translated. Kiri said,
"He's astonishing. Astonishing, eh?"
"What's your judgment of him, Mariko-san?"
Toranaga asked.
"I'm convinced he's telling the truth, or believes he's telling it. Clearly, it would seem that he could, perhaps, have a great value to you, my lord. We have such a tiny knowledge of the outside world. Is that valuable to you? I don't know. But it's almost as though he's come down from the stars, or up from under the sea. If he's enemy to the Portuguese and the Spanish, then his information, if it can be trusted, could perhaps be vital to your interests, nay?"
"I agree," Kiri said. "What do you think, Yeomon Sama?"
"Me, uncle? Oh, I think he's ugly, and I don't like his golden hair and cat's eyes, and he doesn't look human at all,"
the boy said breathlessly.
"I'm glad I wasn't born barbarian like him, but samurai like my father. Can we go for another swim, please?"
"Tomorrow, Yeomon,"
Toranaga said, vexed at not being able to talk directly to the pilot. While they talked among themselves, Blackthorn decided that the time had come. Then Mariko turned to him again.
"My master asks, why were you in the north?"
"I was a pilot of a ship. We were trying to find a northeast passage, Senora. Many things I can tell you will sound laughable, I know," he began. "For instance, 70 years ago, the kings of Spain and Portugal signed a solemn treaty that split ownership of the New World, the undiscovered world, between them. As your country falls in the Portuguese half, officially your country belongs to Portugal. Lord Toranaga, you, everyone, this castle, and everything in it were given to Portugal."
"Oh, please, Anjin-san. Pardon me, that's nonsense."
"I agree. Their arrogance is unbelievable. But it's true."
Immediately she began to translate, and Toranaga laughed derisively.
"Lord Toranaga says he could equally well split the heavens between himself and the Emperor of China, ne?"
"Please tell Lord Toranaga, I'm sorry, but that's not the same,"
Blackthorn said, aware that he was on dangerous ground.
"This is written into legal documents, which give each king the right to claim any non-Catholic land discovered by their subjects, and to stamp out the existing government and replace it with Catholic rule."
On the map, his finger traced a line north to south that bisected Brazil.
"Everything east of this line is Portugal's. Everything west is Spain's. Pedro Cabral discovered Brazil in 1500, so now Portugal owns Brazil, has stamped out the native culture and legal rulers, and has become rich from the gold and silver taken out of mines and plundered from native temples. All the rest of the Americas so far discovered is Spanish-owned now. Mexico, Peru, almost this whole south continent. They've wiped out the Inca nations, obliterated their culture, and enslaved hundreds of thousands of them. The conquistadores have modern guns, the natives none. With the conquistadores come the priests. Soon a few princes are converted, and enmity is used. Then prince is turned against prince, and realm swallowed up piecemeal. Now Spain is the richest nation in our world from the Inca and Mexican gold and silver they've plundered and sent back to Spain."
Mariko was solemn now. She had quickly grasped the significance of Blackthorn's lesson. And so had Toranaga.
"My master says this is a worthless conversation. How could they give themselves such rights?"
"They didn't," Blackthorn said gravely. "The Pope gave them the rights."